Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Allen. And during this segment, we're going to be learning about mindfulness. And, you know, from its name, and mindfulness is not just simply being kind to each other. There's a whole lot more to it. And as I'm just learning a little bit about it, I found it kind of fascinating reading up on the, of course, the, you know, the most trustworthy source of information, the internet. But to get a better explanation, I have a couple of folks here. Bridget Morin is a senior lecturer in the Biological Science Department at Michigan Tech, and she is joined by Kim Menzel. She is an MSW therapist, and they are both mindfulness instructors. Mm-hmm. Welcome to Copper Country Today.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
Well, let's start off with a better definition than what I just gave here. What is mindfulness, and why is it important?
So mindfulness is paying attention in the present moment to what's happening in your life at that moment. So paying attention to how you're responding to situations and circumstances and the thoughts and feelings that you might be having in any given moment, and trying to do so without judgment.
Well, it sounds like a pretty neat thing that everybody should be doing, but what is, I mean, I guess let's dig a little bit deeper, you know, how do you achieve mindfulness?
That's not as easy as it might seem, but one of the best ways to start a mindful practice is to have kind of a meditative practice where you kind of spend some time just sitting with yourself and breathing, really, is what it comes down to, just noticing the breath, noticing really simple things in your body, and like Kim said, trying to not pass judgment about them. And then from that, you tend to kind of continue that action in your life. So maybe stopping and really noticing your walk if you're a student to classes, or your drive to work. Oftentimes I'll come to work and I'll get there and be like, oh my gosh, I didn't even notice like the time that passed to get here. So it starts with sitting and taking a breath and bringing awareness to that, and then just kind of filters into your everyday life.
I use the word meditation. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, a lot of people in the audience, they heard that word and immediately in their mind are thinking Buddhist monks and sitting around chanting, you know, mantras mm-hmm. until they reach euphoria. Mm-hmm. Are we talking about that kind of meditation?
Not quite.
No. So mindfulness is a secular practice. It is not not reliant on any particular religious belief system. It is the practice of meditation is most closely associated with Eastern religions, but it is not mindfulness is not about practicing a certain religion. It's about stopping and drawing an awareness to yourself. So it is about how you are relating to the world around you. But meditative practices, there's contemplative practices in every religion, including prayer. Sometimes practices that people do to come closer to a sense of their connection to something. But for mindfulness, it's about drawing that connection to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Bridget mentioned students at in the college campus there at Michigan Tech. How would it this benefit them and their sort of daily routines?
Oh my gosh, it would be a huge stress relief. One of the major findings that you gain from practicing mindfulness is that your stress levels go down. And there's a lot of physiology behind that. But as students, they're under a lot of pressure, right? They have grades, they have family, they have friends, they have clubs, they have work. I mean, it's like the rest of us. We all have stressors in our life. So by approaching things mindfully and having a mindfulness practice, you can help to alleviate the stress, and then also to not do the judgment piece. You know, we're constantly judging ourselves, like, oh, I'm not gonna pass this class. I'm never gonna be an engineer. I'm not gonna be able to do this. Just remove that and just be with where you are. You know, I'm gonna take this test and I'm gonna do my best. And if it's a B, it's a B. I passed. Alleviating that level of stress, I think, can allow them to be more successful students, you know, and just more successful people, because they can feel free to do what they want to do and not have the pressures constantly weighing down on them.
Well, I guess I want to still get a clearer picture of what mindfulness is. So let's mm-hmm. I'm going to pick something that every student's going to be doing. We're focusing on students, but I understand this practice can be used by, you know, everybody, and could be helpful in business. It could be, you know, you don't even have to work. It can be helpful in your, you know, your daily routines at home. Mm-hmm. But let's just focus on students, since that's where you guys teach this.
Sure.
Walking from one class to another. Every student's going to do that at some point during the day. What's the difference between walking with mindfulness and without?
Mm-hmm. So we could think of when I'm doing a task, and in this case walking, I am going to bring my complete focus to just that. So we tend to move around the world in autopilot. So if we're walking to class, really paying attention to the rise and fall of your step, to the air on your face, to where your mind goes. So when your mind might start going into thinking, storytelling, ideas about other things or future thinking or things that you're thinking about that have already happened, bringing yourself back right now, I'm just walking to class. I'm noticing that I'm walking by this building. I'm noticing the colors of that tree. I'm noticing the colors of the sky. I'm feeling myself breathing. I'm not just rushing to class for the purpose of getting to class. I'm trying to be with myself and notice, how is it to be me right now? What am I noticing? Where is my mind? What are my emotions? What's happening to me physically? So keep bringing yourself back to what's actually happening in the present moment so that you can be where you are in that moment. We tend to be in future thinking and in past thinking. And in doing so, we can't really experience calm and peace for the moments of actually being in our life. We miss things. So when a student's walking to class, instead of thinking about the test they're about to take or the homework that they need to do or what just happened in the class that they left, now saying this now, right now I'm walking. That's all that's happening. Right now in this moment, I want to pay attention to how this experience is.
Perfect.
By shutting out all of those other thoughts that creep in, how does being mindful help you with achieving those, you know, those goals, to making those plans? Because those things are in our head because we are worried about them. We are trying to think about what we've, you know, what we have to do. And in the case of walking from one class to another, it's cold. You got to get there really fast. So getting there, you know, as fast as you can might be the first and foremost thought in your mind.
Mm-hmm. And you can be noticing that. I feel cold. The air is cold. I'm rushing. I'm noticing all of those things. But I am inhabiting my experience. So physically, I'm noticing what's going on with me. I'm noticing where my mind is. And I'm noticing I have influence over what I focus on, what I say to myself, and I'm not just letting my mind get hijacked all the time by whatever thought or story is coming up. And that's how it helps with our stress, because we are making choices over what stories we stay in, what stories are helpful, what stories aren't, and maybe changing what we're saying to ourselves to be more helpful or more kind, less critical, less anxious, less telling stories based on fear. So how it helps long term is they show with functional MRIs that meditators have a higher skill level at focus and attention, so we can actually be more productive when we sit down to do a task. Our mind, we're trained to bring our mind back over and over again to the task at hand, so it's not wandering off as much or for as long. So our concentration, our ability to attend to task, our memory, all improves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
How do you use it to interact with people? Because that, of course, the way you've described it, it sounds, you know, very much it's an introspective way of going about your day. But of course, our day is filled with relationships, interactions with other people. So how does it apply in those situations?
Well, I think for starters, you're really engaged in conversation, right? Like if you can think of a time where someone's been talking and you've been thinking like, oh, I've got this thing going on, you totally missed out on whatever experience you could have had with that person. So if you're paying attention mindfully, you're really listening and you're hearing, and you're also maybe not immediately reacting. Perhaps they say something that you're not comfortable with. A mindful brain will give you a time to take a breath and think about your reaction before just doing it. There's also some research that shows that there's a part of your brain that's fight or flight, right? Like you just kind of jump into things, and oftentimes it takes over. But through mindfulness practice, mindful meditation, you can kind of, like Kim said, tone down the hijacking that it does and let the thinking part of your brain, like, think before you respond or do something that you might regret. So when you're interacting with people, it can be richer because your attention is with them and your attention is with what you're doing. And maybe you're out with the person eating dinner. Your focus is on the meal, is on the conversation, it's on the surroundings, and you're really, like Kim said, inhabiting that experience that you're having with them.
Aren't there situations that will, you know, make it nearly, I don't want to say impossible, incredibly difficult to keep that state of mind? I mean, things happen that upset us during the day. They certainly stress us out. It doesn't take a whole lot. It could be a heavy workload at school or work. It could simply be driving from one place to another. And I know for me, because I do a lot of reading, it's usually reading other people's opinions that get me upset.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, because I have to read a lot of internet stuff. But so how can mindfulness, you know, keep you from, you know, how can mindfulness keep you from having the day-to-day things that normally upset us just derail us?
Well, one of the things that the functional MRIs show is that our brain learns to be less reactive. So it actually changes the structure of the brain. So the part of our brain that's more reactive and cannot access reason, logic, sort of that clear-headed thinking, that weakens. And our ability to stay in the thinking part of our brain, where we can step back out of an emotion or a reaction and actually see the full picture and see beyond our immediate feeling, that we can access that part of our brain better and faster. So it's not that our brain won't get hijacked by some stimulation, some triggering event, but we can notice that we were triggered, we can notice our reactivity faster, and come back. So our rebound is faster. And they call it also resiliency that gets built. So when we are stressed, when we have a challenging moment or a distressing time in our life, certainly we're going to feel distressed, uncomfortable, all the things everybody feels, even if you meditate and practice mindfulness. But your ability to come back from it, to bounce back so that you can access your resources as a person, becomes easier.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would say, you know, we talk a lot about sitting with your emotions, meaning like we're not trying to get rid of having that feeling that, you know, that maybe you're angry, maybe you're upset, maybe you're stressed. Yeah, ideally, we don't have that all the time, but like you said, you're going to have that. It exists in real life. So the idea is, you know, when it happens, to just embrace that it happens, but not totally become it. You literally just name how you're feeling. I'm angry, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to be angry forever, and that doesn't mean that every action I do has to be out of anger. You can just recognize, like, right now this situation is making me feel this way, and I can still function even though I have, like, this feeling going on. So a lot of times I think people think of meditation and maybe mindfulness as just totally erasing emotion or totally ignoring things, and that's not it at all. It's just recognizing that it's there, and like Kim said, being resilient, owning that it's happening, but still functioning and coming back a little faster.
We live in a time where we're inundated with fast diets and get-rich schemes, and a lot of people are looking for ways to fix themselves. From some of the things that I've read is oftentimes when people fail at, when they try this, it's because they think, oh, well, here's something that's going to fix me, and I'm going to try this, and then my life is going to be so much happier now. And they try it for a little while, and it doesn't change your circumstances necessarily, and so they give it up, and they chalk it up to another failed fad and move on. So what would you say to those people who are looking for something that, oh, good, this is what I've been looking for, and I'll make this my New Year's resolution, and everything will be fine in 2018?
So I would say, you know, to realize it's not about achieving a certain state of being. It's not about changing or creating a certain outcome. It's really about coming back to yourself over and over again with clear eyes so that you can see, you can learn more about yourself. How do I react to this? What are my habits of thinking? What are my habits, my behaviors that are helpful to me, and what is not? So where is there room for me to respond differently, or for me to help self-soothe or de-escalate myself in moments where I'm incredibly stressed. And recognizing that it's not about being calm all the time. It's not about being at peace. It's about being in your life with a greater sense of ease.
Yeah, and I do think it, starting out, like just practicing mindfulness, like I said earlier, it's about taking a breath. And we can get into the anatomy and physiology of it. We don't have to, but just breathing stimulates the part of your nervous system that calms you down. So if you are someone who might have stress or anxiety or a situation brings those feelings up, stop and take a breath. You have to do it a lot. We always talk about the mindfulness muscle, right? It's like if you want to grow muscles in your body, you have to do reps. You have to constantly do it. It's the same thing with mindfulness. You have to be practicing it, but it's as easy as breathing, and we're all doing that every day. So it's intentionally recognizing like, whoa, I just got really stressed out about this situation, and I'm taking a breath. And I think that that's something that most people can do. And if you do it, even three times a day, I won't even say 3 minutes, then you'll notice a difference. You'll notice that you can tell when you've gone off somewhere that's not here and now, and you can bring yourself back using the breath or using some sort of anchor, something that keeps you in the present.
I think a lot, some of this that we do, or at least we know, works naturally because, you know, I start every day, I'm here at 3 a.m. I get ready for, you know, to do the news. It's the first thing that I do. Well, driving into work, that's what my mind is constantly thinking of. You know, I need 6 to 8 stories that need to be written. They need to be done. I got 2 hours to get it all done. I'm under deadline. I'm under deadline all day long. And I get here and I get my cup of coffee. And the days that I have the best days is when I stop for a second before I start doing the work and sit there and just stop thinking about it for a second. Now, that doesn't reach the levels of the meditation that you were, you know, that you're describing, but it at least lets me know that we kind of believe this works anyways.
Right.
And for those that practice prayer, it's the same sort of thing. When you start your day off with prayer, it's to center yourself. Mm-hmm. And in that case, it's centering yourself in the presence of God and what, you know, you feel is required of you for the day. But this is a different kind of form of that same sort of this exploring, you know, yourself in reaching that point of clarity before you let everything else in, and then you're a little bit better to deal with it. Am I on the right track?
Absolutely. You're totally right. I always tell my students, I teach a biology of movement meditation class. We actually talk about this science. And I always tell them, like, you don't have to believe it, because taking a breath is going to change your body. That's just how the body works. So if you sit down and you take a breath, and we'll practice breathing, and you'll notice your mind wanders, you come back to the breath. Your mind wanders, you come back to the breath. And I think sometimes people think, oh my gosh, if I can't stay totally focused on the breath, I can't do that. That's not true. Every opportunity you have to notice your mind wandering and coming back to the breath, you have just strengthened your practice. So like you said, coming into work, taking a couple breaths, and even if you take 2 breaths and then you start to think of that news story, you recognize you're doing it, come back to the breath, take another breath, it happens again. Every opportunity you do that, you're getting better at it. You're improving. So it kind of, it gets tricky because people think, oh, I'll never do this because I can't focus. Well, it's actually kind of good in the beginning because then you have lots of opportunity to practice.
We say we like certain things and we believe that these things bring us joy because we do them every single day. And one of the aspects of this that I came across was, well, ask yourself why you like something, or be conscious of, you know, say if... say if you're a smoker and you enjoy smoking, well, then ask yourself, well, why do you do it? You know, take a look at that. And then you might find out that, you know, what you thought you were getting pleasure from it, you really are not. And then you become mindful of the other aspects of it, the smell, the taste, the money, all of those sort of things. And I'm not saying this is a great way to stop smoking. I'm just using it as an example of becoming self-aware of something that you may do every day and then realizing, why am I doing this?
That's great.
Absolutely. We become more aware of our habits, our reactive habits, and just things we do that may not be as helpful as we believe, but it's our habit, it's our go-to. So one of the studies I just saw about smoking is teaching people mindfulness when they're trying to quit smoking helps them do exactly what you say. Notice all of the other layers to the experience besides, so perhaps I can get that positive from doing something else. And it helps us to detach a little bit from our attachment to that's my habit, that's who I am, or that's what I do. No, it's just what you've done for a long time, so it's very familiar. But perhaps it allows you to free yourself up to say, do I really choose that? Or is that the best thing for me right now?
What about things we don't have really any control of? Like, for instance, I have a back condition, ankylosing spondylitis. It causes me to be in pain all day, all the time, constantly in pain. Even with medication, it helps, but I'm in pain all the time. Well, I can't do anything about it. I'm going to be in pain every single day. I can try to work through the pain, and that's normally what I just try to do. But for somebody that has something that no matter how much I want to think positively about it, it's still going to hurt. Mm-hmm. How is mindfulness going to help in a situation like that?
So they use mindfulness training with people in chronic pain quite a bit to good effect. And one of the things is to change your relationship to the sensation of pain. So because pain is so gripping and it's so preoccupying, it's how we respond to the sensation. So even if you can't change it, it's our story around it and how we respond to the sensation that helps change your experience of it.
Yeah, I have chronic back pain, and I actually found an online meditation specifically for pain management. And just like Kim said, really it was reshaping the way you react to it. It was, noticing that it's there, letting go of the fact that I can't change it, but trying to recognize when maybe it brings out anger or frustration or sadness, and just kind of separating those things, like this exists, this pain exists, and yes, I can't do anything about it, but I can still function, and I can't let the anger that it might have caused or the frustration that it might have caused dictate everything that I do. Because like you said, chronic pain is, it's just constantly in your head. You can't ignore it. And by kind of removing, by detaching the emotions that go with it, you can deal with it more effectively. You can live with it and not have it be what defines you all the time, or is what is constantly in the front of your head.
And I think it helps you to soften, and instead of constrict and tighten too, mm-hmm. the more you notice, so what is my body doing in response to this pain right now? It gives you an opportunity to sort of, as you breathe in and allow yourself to just soften and soothe around it, is much more helpful than what we tend to do against pain, which is tighten and constrict, because that's our response mm-hmm. to things that mm-hmm. hurt or we're uncomfortable with.
Right.
Bridget, with your students at Michigan Tech that mm-hmm. have been open to trying this, have you seen any kind of improvement?
I haven't done any formal studies, but I definitely, I'll have students in the movement meditation class say, before an exam, I go and I take 3 breaths, or, I've been doing this at home, I've been using this online app, and I think it does help them. A lot of the students that I get in the class are already interested and excited, and even in other classes, sometimes, like the other ones I teach, I'll have my students take a couple breaths, and they're like, oh, we should do that before every exam or every assignment, when I notice that they have really high anxiety. So anecdotally, yeah, I do think it helps. Number-wise, I haven't really gotten down to the nitty-gritty, but I certainly hope so.
Them being in it together, does that help? Is there a bit of a, sort of support?
I think so. I think everybody's on board. Sometimes they might feel like they're going to get judged if they're sitting there closing their eyes and breathing before an exam, but that's just standard practice in our class. Every day we start with breathing, and then we talk about a certain topic, and then we end with some mindful movement, some yoga, maybe some breath work. And yeah, we're all doing it together. They can hopefully release that, like, oh my gosh, I hope nobody's watching me or thinking that this is goofy, because we're all doing it, We're all here to hopefully relieve some stress.
And how long have you been presenting this?
The class?
Yes.
I've been teaching the class, I think this will be the second year I've taught it, 1, 2, 3, 4, like maybe 7 semesters. So yeah, it's been really great. It's probably one of my favorite ones to teach.
And Kim, how do you, are you part of this class too in instructing this?
No, Bridget and I do other mm-hmm. Groups together. So we have a group right now that meets once a month on Tuesdays, and we'll be moving to something weekly in January. But we do both seated meditation, walking meditation, and yoga. Mm-hmm. So I use it with my clients every day. I practice mindfulness-based cognitive therapy. And so the clients that work with me come typically with anxiety and or depression. And so we do practices both when they're meeting with me and also in between sessions. So stopping and noticing, you know, what thoughts they're having, what stories they're telling themselves, and what their response is to things can help them recognize how much influence they have over how they feel generally.
For our listeners who want to know more about mindfulness or they want to get some instruction, of course, they could do what I did and just look it up on the internet, but they want some more trustworthy information and more experienced instructors. How can they do if they're not a Michigan Tech student?
They can come to our class on Thursdays, the third Thursday of the month.
Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Where at?
It's at the Judalis Center, so 200 Michigan. It's the old Portage Hospital, the Judalis Center. So, and we'll be having weekly classes starting Tuesday, January 16th, and that's at 5:30 in the evening. So it's typically a small group, and you don't have to have any experience.
No.
Everybody is there either new or with some practice, but it doesn't matter. We also have over at Tech on Wednesday mornings at 10:30 to 11:20, I teach fundamentals of mindfulness. So it's whoever wants to either join for the six-week session or drop in weekly. And we do seated practice, walking, and body scans, which is another mindfulness practice. Mm-hmm. So there are also a lot of opportunities in the community to do seated meditation with different groups and
yoga
or practice
classes.
Yoga.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. I understand it a whole lot better now, so I bet everybody else does.
Hopefully. Thank you so much for having
us. Thank you so much.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.